everybody. The honeymoon period for Alex Sanderson at Sail is well and truly over, and we are already at the soul searching stage as a calamitous 10 minutes at the Stoop consigned Sail to a second consecutive defeat in the league, 24 points to 12. My name is Lewis. Welcome back inside the Shark Tank. I'm delighted to say I'm joined as always by my co-hosts, Alex and James. Alex, how are you?
Not too bad, thanks, mate. Slightly disappointed after yesterday, but after seeing the team, I think we were all relatively accepting of the fact that we maybe didn't stand as good a chance as we thought we did. So, you know, taking the positives, I think, which largely starts and ends with Rafi Quirk, but take the positives into next week. How are you?
Not too bad. Disappointed, I think, is the right phrase. I think even with those changes that you mentioned, which we'll come on to, there's still a good chance for Sale to win on Saturday lunchtime, but unfortunately it wasn't to be for a lot of different reasons. James, how are you?
Disappointed to be losing two on the bounce. I mean, you know, the Premiership's a really tough competition. Sale fans, you know, we've clearly got way ahead of ourselves, and we've done it quite a lot over the last couple of years. But, you know, winning away at a form team was going to be tough. Obviously, losing two in a row, one of them being at home against an out-of-form Bath side, it's left us in a situation where we are falling down the table, and makes next week even more important, right? Which I know we'll get onto later on.
Right, so let's start with some three-word reviews before we kind of dissect a second consecutive loss on the bounce. And I've actually had to split these into two different segments, and you'll see why momentarily. So Greg Whelan, please stay awake. Andrew Albinson, time for patience. SAFC Shark, too much experimentation. James Byrne, no back row balance. Mark Cole, mad 12 minutes. Gareth Cornelius, game line unbreakable again. And Nicholas Waite, coaching the concern with a question mark. So those are the first ones. And the second ones, Dan Pott, Rafi, nothing else. Lee Watson, Rafi Quirk arrives. Richard Lilly, Rafi second choice. Salop Sharks, Quick, Ashman, sorry, Quirk, Ashman, Rod, big thumbs up. And Jack, Raf D Quirk, with D spelt like his buddy Fafter Clerk. So, I mean, James, before we start talking about Rafi Quirk, who I think is going to be one of the main points of today's pod, obviously, you know, Sale go down to the Stoop, 24 points to 12 loss, nothing for the Sharks off the back of Saturday's game. What went wrong for Sale on Saturday lunchtime?
Well, it was a collection of things, I think. You know, I think after Alex Anderson sort of said, well, I rotated too much with 10 the week before, to rotate 7 or 8 this week seemed a little bit weird. So, you know, clearly we're in a situation where we're chopping and changing quite large amounts of people each week. So there's no consistency, no relationships building. And quite clearly that stopped the momentum of this team in its tracks that we'd built up following Alex's Sanderson's arrival. And then other than that, you know, I think two forward passes from Quince. No. We were unfortunate. We were the best side for, I think. We didn't play brilliantly, but I do think we were the best side for two-thirds of that game, is my personal view. And it was almost like watching old Sale, where, you know, they have a shocker for a third of the game and end up losing, not even getting a bonus point. That's my view of the game. You know, the first two tries for Quins came from Sale attacking positions. So, you know, the first was, you know, we were attacking in the 22. It was returning a kick, which was, you know, we had plenty of time between Yard and Hammersley to piss about. You know, it was not a ball that Quins would put up to compete. This was an attacking position for Sale to return the kick. And then the second one, we had on the 10 metre, a line out that went wrong, which has obviously been, you know, pretty much the story of the season for Sale on and off. So they've hit us with two tries in very quick succession, doing what Quins do, which sort of hit you on the break with lots of pace, with broken up field. Yeah. Other than that, our defence, in terms of, you know, structurally, was fine for most of the game. But we know in professional rugby, if you get turned over, you're in the shit, and that's what happened with us. So, you know, look, we, and then we melted and conceded another try. So 2 weeks in a row, we've just given ourselves too much to do in the second half by not being able to concentrate and making mistakes. But I wouldn't say that we've suddenly turned into a terrible side. You know, for two thirds of that game, it looked like the Bristol performance. We just couldn't carry it over the full 80.
Alex, so off the back of that, then, what is most concerning for you? You know, is it the fact that we had 63% of possession, 64% of territory, and didn't really do anything with it, particularly in that first half? Or are you more concerned about the manner in which we shipped the tries, the sort of lack of genuine attempts to you know, bring Joe Marchant down on a couple of occasions, etc.? You know, is it you know, that kind of failure in attack or that kind of like weak transition defence that you're more concerned about?
Well, I think the first point is that this is a completely different team to the one that beat Bristol, isn't it? And, you know, as was last week when we didn't perform against Bath. So I think what's quite clear is that we have a very much a first-choice team that operates very well together. And that tends to involve Sam James being at 13, Luke James being at 15, Faf de Klerk and AJ McGinty at halfback. And I think that changes our game a lot. But I think the concern for me is the inability to execute and the inability to build pressure and then, you know, get points from it. Because I think what happened in this game was that we started quite well overall, and we weren't able to put points on the board, either penalties or tries, through poor execution, you know, mistakes of our own making, either players getting isolated or dropping the ball. And then Quinn score a bit of a freak try, which came from some poor decision-making, but, you know, it's 7 points. We've been the better team all game. And you know, I said at the time that the old sale, this is where heads go down. And because we've sort of chipped away at that confidence by not executing and not scoring points initially, we then, you know, I think that was a massive blow to concede that try and be 7-0 down when we felt like we should have been 14 points up. And we just seemed to then implode. And I think the worrying thing is the execution and attack is worrying and has been for a long time. But I still think that the mentality needs a hell of a lot of work in this team. And it is getting better. But I do think that when you look at how good we were, that needed some calm heads, some cool heads, and some rational decision making. We had the wind in that first half. We should have been putting Quinns under pressure, chucking them back into their corners, you know, and going, okay, we've conceded 7 points, but if we go in at half time 7-3 down, then, you know, we can reset. And instead, we just collapsed. And that's the issue. And then you see stupid decision making, like Jean-Luc Dupria smashing his shoulder into Alex Dombrandt's shoulder/head. You know, for no apparent reason, that it gave no benefit to us. And I think it's just that, you know, the attack is a massive area of concern. Defensively, I think it was individuals who made errors, so the system isn't the issue there. And, you know, this isn't our first team, so that's fine. But I think the squad mentality and the sort of, you know, when we don't have AJ on the field, I think we really lack some leadership in the rest of the team, apart from Jono, because Jono hits up and does that, you know, powerful physical lead by example. But you need, you know, I think you need AJ and those kind of brains and that on-field talking that we just don't really have when he's not on the pitch.
I think it's a very interesting point as well about the two different styles of leadership that we seem to get between Jono and AJ, especially given that in the previous regime under Dimes, a lot was made about the fact that those two are the kind of two leaders on the pitch and do a lot of the talking in the locker room at half time. Just having a look at the timeline for this game then, and it makes a pretty miserable reading. You know, no points for either team in the first 26 minutes. And this was, as Alex rightly mentioned, when Sale had the wind at the backs and Quinns were really struggling to get out of their own half because of the fact that the box kicks and the clearance kicks were getting caught up quite significantly in the air. So no points for 26 minutes. Sale have around 70% possession. Can't do anything with it. Then it's a Joe Marchant try on 26 minutes, a second Joe Marchant try on 29 minutes, and then an Alex Dombrandt try on 37 minutes. So three tries in 11 minutes. And we spoke about this, you know, on our group, and it's kind of felt like that was the game there and then. But obviously, sales sort of come back in the second half, James, and you know, it's a very similar story to the first half, actually. Despite it playing into the win now, Sale had, you know, 65% odd possession, and really kind of controlled the game. And, you know, was there anything particular that stood out in the second half that for you that marked a change from how we were playing in the first half in terms of our execution, particularly with the ball?
I just think there was a lot less panic on the field. It was almost like they knew that the game would be difficult to get anything out of, so it kind of took a bit of pressure off. You know, we were a bit more frantic in the first half. I think, you know, you're aware, aren't you, as a player, that, you know, when you're on top of the game for 25 minutes and don't score a point, and then the opposition score three tries from nowhere in 11 minutes, that you kind of been sucker punched, and you know, it's difficult to come back from. I think you make a really good point about AJ's leadership. That said, Rob Dupree, I think, does deserve a lot of credit for last week and this week in the second half. He showed a lot of mental strength and mettle, which I think a lot of people had questioned. And he actually has carried the team in, you know, a little bit in terms of the backs, and, you know, and actually, you know, he's been aggressive, you know, with the passion's been there. And he's really, you know, he dragged us back to a bonus point last week. And nearly got us there this week. You know, I'm not saying that he's our best fire half. Definitely not. Yeah, AJ needs to come back into this team. But it's almost as much for his leadership and his goal kicking than, you know, anything else. And Rob, I think a lot of people have been kind of not very nice about Rob Dupree in the last few months. And he's shown a lot of mental strength. And we've got to hand it to him for that. We honestly do. So yeah, and then also I think that, you know, I think the forward pack, it played to our strengths in the game, didn't it, which was holding on to possession. So, you know, it not a lot changed in that terms. It almost gave us license to just be happy with holding on to the possession, but clearly in both halves we struggled to score points. What was your thoughts, Lewis?
I think the relative bluntness of our attack is really starting to show. And I think we can chop and change as much as we want, particularly in the back line, but we're not really finding the right combination at the moment in terms of players. And I think two things kind of come off the back of that. The first is that we lose games like Saturdays because we can't score points. You know, when you have so much possession, you know, in territory, in the first 25 minutes of the game, you know, you should be coming away with 3-7, you know, 14 points. And actually, we could still have been sucker punched by Quinns three times in that first half. But with even a little bit of incisiveness up front, you know, we'd be going into the break 21-10 down, for example. And it's a completely different game, especially in the second half, where we executed a little bit better. And you saw that we were actually probably on the day the slightly better team, you know, taking nothing away from Quinns, and we thought we're brilliant in exploiting our weaknesses. But I think the second thing is it shows how poor our backline is. You know, let's not mince words. I think there are a number of players who are probably on their last legs in a Sale shirt. I think we are seeing probably the end of Will Cliff as a sort of effective player, particularly on a hard and fast pitch. I think he's still can do a good job marshalling the forwards around on a cold Friday night, but he was found out a little bit with his delivery and his pace of play when conditions were obviously warm and you know, the pitch was better. I think Simon Hammersley doesn't quite look up to it as a top four caliber fullback. And I think he had quite a few opportunities to really run the ball back. And we're yet to really see him put in a sort of 8 out of 10 performance in a Sale shirt. And I think lastly, Luke James, you know, is definitely more effective as a 15. That's great. But I think actually in the back line, sorry, the back three, it was great to see Denny Solomona back, but he looked like he was running in treacle for the majority of the game. And I think there's a real concern, which was sort of exposed by this Quinns game, which is, if Marlon Yard isn't having a particularly effective game, can we rely on Denny Solomona, Simon Hammersley, or indeed Luke James, you know, to bring that kind of separation pace to the team, you know, make a line break, make a clean break, get away from the man, you know, and beat players one-on-one? Because we actually did a really good job in the first 20 minutes of getting around the corner, getting the ball to Rob Dupree or Sam James and attacking the outside shoulders. But what we found is that the ball would then go to Solomona or Hammersley, and the attack would basically stall because neither of those players was able to beat their man and actually sort of break the field open. I don't think that changes if you move Luke James to 15. Maybe it gives us a bit more solidity. But I think games like this really show that the issue with Sale isn't the defence. It isn't the forward pack. It's the back line. And I think Sanderson is probably rotating the squad at the moment with an eye to working out who to keep. And I think at the moment, there's not many players in our back line who are guaranteed, you know, a long future at Sale. And that's probably the roster turnover that needs to happen. And actually on that, Alex, I really wanted to talk about a point you made earlier in the week to me. You know, we've spoken about how Sanderson is rotating the squad quite considerably at the moment. And you made a great point about how you think he's been given a bit of a mandate from above him to kind of rotate the team and see who is best to kind of keep moving forward. Can you expand on that a little bit and kind of share that point with our listeners? Because I think it's an absolutely brilliant one. And I think it makes defeats like Saturday's come into slightly sharper focus with that context.
Yeah, well, I think you see that he is, you know, there are some players who under Dimes didn't really get a look in. I mean, Ewan Ashman's a prime example. But there are, you know, other players who have been brought into the team in either positions they haven't really been trusted in. You know, Simon Hammersley had a lot of game time on the Dimes, but he ended up being on the wing for the majority of this season. And I think what you're seeing is that there's a lot of combinations being tried out and a lot of players being tried out. Conor Doherty, you know, Dimes always talked about playing him, but never actually did it. You know, he put him on the bench, but then not bring him on. And you can see that Sanderson is playing them or putting them on the bench and bringing them on. And we are seeing kind of everyone tried out. And what it seems to me is, you know, relegation's gone away this season. And I think, you know, bear in mind that when Sanderson came in, we were still in a good position in the league, but realistically, we A, had an easy run, and B, we weren't that far into the season. And, you know, to expect Sanderson to push for top four and a Premiership win this season on the basis of, you know, what he's come into, which is a pretty disrupted squad, after Dimes leaving, which is a massive, massive change, I think is quite unreasonable. And I think what I hope has happened, certainly, is that, you know, Orange and Mason and whoever else is in charge of this has said to Sanderson, we don't expect you to win the league this season. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be going for top four, because I think we are fundamentally good enough, especially compared to the other teams in the league, to be a top four side. And we've seen that in certain performances. But if you take that pressure off of needing to win the league, what we've got here is a young DOR who hopefully should be in the position for a long time and should be building a squad that he wants to work with. And therefore, what he's doing in each of these selections is looking at players and going, are you up to it? And can I trust you? Because that is what Sarri's historically did. And James will be able to elaborate on this better than I will. But they had a squad of players, not a first 15. And what Sale had for such a long time was a really good first 15 and nothing behind it. And what I hope Sanderson's trying to build, and what it seems like he's trying to build, is a really good squad with that blend of international class, established Sale homegrown players, and young academy prospects coming through who can support in those positions. And I think it is going to be better for us as a club to have a squad of 30 players who we can play in, you know, Premiership games and European games, rather than what could happen, which is this season, play Faf and AJ in every game, play Sam James in every game. You know, don't bring Rafi Quirk and Conor Doherty in because they'll make mistakes. They'll have some really, really good games, but they'll make mistakes. So if we can't trust, you know, if we want to win the league, we play Faf and AJ every game and we have no depth long term. And I think that's the right approach, but it does mean that when you go away to Quinns and you start with Wilcliffe and Rob de Pria because you're trying to work out if they are sufficient, you know, squad players to be kept on long term, you're gonna at some point get found out. We started Conor Doherty against Bath and he made an error that led to one of their tries. Now, he came on against Quins and actually I thought had a really, really good game. And I think he looks like a real talent and needs to be trusted, which you get the sense Sanderson will. But it requires patience from a fan base and from the owners. So I'm hoping that he's been given that patience from the owners. You would expect that. But I do also think that as a fan base, we have to have patience and go, we are going to lose some games that we probably could win if we played a full strength team this season. And you have to understand the bigger rationale behind that, which hopefully is this. It might not be, we never know. But I think that is key. And yes, we could win the league this season if we played Faf and AJ and they played well and everything went our way. But equally, that, you know, is a 5% chance. We can win the league in two seasons if we rotate and if we develop this squad to the potential that it has, because it does have massive potential. I think that is the point, and that is why I am not, you know, doom and gloom after a loss away at Quins. And hopefully, I hope that is right, and I hope people see that. And yes, I want us to be in top four this season. I'd love it. But what I would rather is have a top six and go to next season with a really, really strong squad, not just a strong team.
Well, I think that's a really good summary of potentially the mandate Sanderson has been given for this season. And that certainly seems evidenced by some of his selection choices. And I want to talk very particularly about one of those, which is, of course, Rafi Quirk. You want to take a positive out of Saturday's game, it is Quirk. And there's a reason why we put, you know, the three-word reviews into two different segments. It's because, based on one of the tweets that Alex put out on Saturday afternoon, everybody loves Rafi Quirk. And for good reason. You know, he came on with about sort of 25 minutes in and it made an immediate impact. And I mentioned a couple of minutes ago about the fact that, you know, Wilcliffe had a really tough game on Saturday on a fast pitch in conditions that maybe aren't suited to where his game is in his career. Rafi Quirk comes on and immediately the pace and accuracy of a delivery from the base of the ruck, it seems to improve. Players are running onto the ball. He makes a fantastic line break and nearly scores a try in the subsequent following phases. You know, he gets a try assist for Rob Dupree's try, which brings us back within a couple of scores. James, I mean, for me, this is genuinely the first time I've seen Rafi Quirk play. It won't be the same for you. But I came away feeling very, very impressed by this young man and you know, the ability that he has. But for you, as someone who's followed Quirk's progress through the academy and through the England age groups, this must feel like a brilliant vindication of a talent that you've been telling me about for 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a guy who, through the England age groups, is the standout. You know, under 16s, under 18s, he's the best player in that age group. Not just the best nine, the best player. That puts him in, you know, like a Redpath kind of, you know, in terms of sales academy's history. Look at Sam Moore, Cam Redpath, as people who have stood out as like some of the, you know, the best players of their age group, no matter what position. And obviously they've had, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, they've had different journeys and probably still got some journeys still to go. And so is Rafi. I mean, he's still incredibly young. I think, you know, where there'll be question marks is not coming on with 25 minutes to go as a scrum half, because, you know, everyone has an impact as a scrum half coming on with 20, 25 minutes to go. They just do, because, you know, it's a very exhausting position and you come on, you know. But what was so impressive was his accuracy of his passing, you know, which, you know, under pressure in that sort of performance, senior rugby, you know, that's where you start to overthink things. He wasn't overthinking things. And that's where, you know, the potential can become the reality, because people just adapt to new environments and they take that potential and the pressure makes them better, makes them perform at their best rather than makes them perform at their worst. And I think that that's what we've seen a little light of. Obviously, the question mark will come when he's starting games. You know, how does he control his forward pack? How does he manage his fitness over that time? How does his decision making in terms of, you know, go or run the ball or kick? You know, that's where he's really going to be tested. So it's very, very early days. On the Will Clough matter, I can't let that go. I'm just going to have to say my piece on that, which is, you know, we can't write this lad off. He was probably, arguably at least, our best nine in 2020. You know, just a few months ago, our three-word reviews were all about how Faf was out of form and Will Clough was our form nine. It was literally weeks ago. It was weeks ago. We're not talking about like 2 or 3 years of sort of, you know, slow decline here. There is obviously a reality, which is, you know, Will is, you know, coming into, you know, he's probably his last year of his career, potentially next season. And we need to be bringing the next people through. And what we need to be doing is selecting on form. Will has had a really, really poor two games, I think. But this is somebody whose, you know, his form has been a very high standard for most of 2020. And he's played over 200 games for the club. He's still got a very important role to play. And we have to manage Rafi Quirk really, really well. Because what we don't want to do is end up with a, you know, a Roebuck and Doherty situation last week, you know, where that could have had a really big impact on them mentally, which is why it was so brilliant that Doherty came on and actually played pretty well. Because I think that is now the memory that he takes forward. The next job is to pick Roebuck again, you know, in a strong side and rebuild any confidence that might have been damaged by that Bath performance. So yeah, I'll let you guys talk about Rafi Quirk from there, but this is absolutely no surprise at all for me. And he's definitely got the potential to play for England at some point, but he's incredibly young and has got a lot of skill sets to learn, both from Faf and from Will Clough for me.
Yeah, I do think that kind of rounding his game with the elements that I think especially Faf will be a really good kind of lesson in that, because he has added so much to his game from being at Sale, in terms of control, in terms of his kicking, that kind of thing, that's a really good kind of comparison in effect, because Quirk looks and you know, I think what impressed me most was he came on and the quality of the service from the base was just superb. You know, it was pinpoint passes, bringing people onto the ball. And I think that's what we'd missed while Clough was on, which was probably why the contrast is so stark, because the style Will Clough plays tends to be slowing the game down, get people in the right positions, pass the ball to them. And one of the problems with Will Clough on Saturday was that I thought his actual distribution, which tends to be very good, was actually quite poor. And he was giving the ball to Rob Dupree, especially in kind of places where you don't really want it as a 10, you know, above your head with onrushing sevens looking to absolutely murder you. And what Quirk did was bring Rob Dupree onto the ball. And we discussed it at the time, but that actually forced Rob Dupree into making decisions on the game line, which he is actually very good at. And when he did that, he made the right decisions. He picked the right passes. And we just got the game moving so much quicker. You know, and I think Quirk offers that threat around the base that keeps defences honest, that Will Clough probably doesn't. And I think you saw that Harlequins were able to attack our 10-12 and then subsequently outside winger channels, because they knew that Clough wasn't going to threaten around the base. As soon as Rafi Quirk came on, yeah, they had to, you know, be conscious of that different attacking threat that he brought. And you are right that, you know, other teams will not, you know, I think Will Clough played into Harlequin's defensive strengths, and I think Rafi Quirk probably exposed them, and that won't be the case for other teams, and he'll have difficult games. But I just thought the pace he played at and the accuracy he brought was so in contrast to anything we've seen from Sale's nines for a long time. Since, you know, I'm talking Dwayne Peel probably is the last guy I remember who was able to deliver that quality of ball at pace, because since then it's been slower, more controlled nines who were then able to, on occasion, you know, explode and deliver the right ball. Faf's a bit of magic, but he's actually quite a slow nine because of, you know, how he plays with South Africa internationally. So yeah, just massively exciting from Rafi Quirk, something we haven't seen, and the quality of his performance, especially for his age, we talk about it all the time, was super.
I think that's a brilliant point, particularly around how Quins were able to really focus in on our style of play in that 10 and 12 channel, especially in the first sort of 50, 60 minutes because there wasn't that threat. And actually what we saw quite consistently throughout this game was that Sale are lacking pace in the back line. They're really missing De Klerk. They're really missing Rad van Rensburg as well, who does have genuine separation pace to keep defences honest if there's the opportunity of a line break. And that wasn't there. And actually, when Quirk comes on, the game speeds up. And when the game speeds up, it actually fell into our favour a little bit because Rob Dupree is a very, very, is actually a very capable ball carrier as a fly half. He's someone who can actually take it to the game line, and he's quite adept at shrugging off tackles and opening up the space a little bit more. And we saw that, you know, he didn't have a single carry into the game line for a lot of the game. Didn't really have to test Marcus Smith, who's notoriously got, you know, so-so defence. And the first time he gets the ball in with a bit of space and at pace, he runs over Marcus Smith and scores a try. And I think, you know, at the moment, we need to find pace wherever we can in this back line. And Quirk being able to keep defences honest around the fringes and bringing the ball out at speed opens up more avenues for Luke James and Sam James, etc., players who don't have the natural speed themselves to create space. So you need a De Klerk or a Quirk to kind of manufacture that for them. And we saw the first signs of that in the second half of that Quinns game, which is very encouraging.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. If I could just mention a couple of other selection decisions, which I think, you know, is kind of, for me, needs to be taken into account moving forwards. First of all, I think that Cameron Neal is criminally underplayed. I've said this before to you guys on the chat, but for me, he needs to be starting matches at six, playing at seven, obviously, when there's no Curries. You know, we haven't seen Sam Dugdale for 2 weeks. But him coming off the bench seems like a good fit for me. But certainly if Cam Neal, you know, starting games, he just brings a kind of a grit and a work rate, which I think that, you know, we lack when we play Jean-Luc and Dan Dupria together in the same back row. You know, a defensive work rate, but also a carrying work rate in and around the close quarters. Where the Dupriers are so damaging is that just that one bit further out where they can get ahead of steam, but can also then start, you know, making line breaks themselves, offloads and things like that. That's where they're damaging. You know, the Cam Neals, the John O'Rosses, they're the people that are carrying it into other blind sides, other second rows, really difficult, hard graft work. And I think that, you know, Cam Neal needs to be letting John O have some rest sometimes as well. And linked to that point, you know, for me, who watched a lot of Super Rugby, Jean-Luc and Dan together in the back row doesn't tend to work. It just doesn't. I don't know 100% why. I've just maybe given one reason why I think it might, which is they're operating in the same sort of channels and aren't doing that hard, you know, that kind of work rate that I was talking about. But where I think Jean-Luc is more adept is actually in the second row, which happened by accident. And the reason why I think that he's better in the second row is because it ties him into our structures a little bit more, yeah? And it doesn't isolate him on his own where he's having to make decisions. And I think that where we've seen some of the bad side of Jean-Luc recently is where he's isolated. He's having to make decisions about whether to go to compete for balls, whether to go in for tackles, all things like that. And he's not making the best rugby decisions, but he's clearly an amazing, you know, physical specimen with some amazing one-off skill sets. So it's about how do we make the most of him? And I think for me, it's either in the second row if Dan's playing as well, or it's rotating with Dan at eight, or it's playing at six if like a Beaumont or a Ross is at eight. Do you know what I mean? So it's just getting that balance right a little bit. Clearly, we're missing both of the Curries. My point on Solomona is, you know, it's great to see him back. He's been having a tough time. He's had a difficult couple of seasons for me. I think he's deserved the right to have now a run of games, two or three games in a row, playing on the right wing. And, you know, can he find his confidence? Can he find his form? I think if he doesn't, then I think there'll be question marks potentially about his future at Sale. But he has more than earned the right now to go on a run of games and try and find it. If Sanderson's got this opportunity to rotate, someone like Denny, if we can get him back to where he was, you know, there's no need to go and sign another winger. If we can't, we need to know. We need to know now whether this is a permanent issue or whether it's just a temporary one. And Hamsley, for me, at 15, it just isn't working for Sale. You know, he was more adept on the wing because he's, you know, he's got some solid skills and he, you know, and all of the rest of it. For me, he's not a good enough ball player and decision maker. It's not just the pace. For me, if he was, if Alex Good doesn't have a lot of pace, Mike Cayley doesn't have a lot of pace. It's about decision making, and it's about also having good hands and the ability to make good decisions. For me, that Hammersley just doesn't quite make those good decisions that we would like. So, bit of a worry there. Obviously, you know, don't wish anybody down, and hope that they come back. Front row's looking good. Thought Ashman had a good first start. You know, it showed that, you know, it's easier to come on and make an impact off the bench, right? Because Langdon did exactly the same. Came off the bench, made an immediate impact and improved. But it says to me we've got some good depth there. And the front row went well again, I thought, just more generally. And second row, I mean, we've probably got, like, you know, at least two too many. But we've got really, really good ones. Postlethwaite, I thought we had a really solid start to that game. And, we, you know, I suppose we're going to need that depth if a few of them get called up for South Africa and stuff in the future. But I know, I think we're looking good in the second row.
Just one final note on Denny, actually, just before we move on. I think we haven't actually had a chance to discuss it, but obviously he's been very vocal and open in the last couple of weeks about some of the off-field struggles that he's had recently, which, first of all, you know, we want to say is extremely noteworthy and something to applaud, you know, that kind of openness and being so forthright in terms of what's happening off the field. And obviously, you know, we want to extend our support to Denny and, you know, wish him the absolute best. And that does, you know, potentially explain the maybe lack of impact on the pitch at the moment. He does look a little bit rusty. And obviously, if things aren't going great for him off the field, then obviously that's understandable as well. So just wanted to make sure, because I don't think we've had a chance to do it, you know, just to say, you know, I think it's something certainly worth applauding. And obviously that, you know, ourselves and the rest of the South Arm base definitely have Denny's back and definitely hope for, you know, for him to be able to you know, kind of get back to where he was a couple of seasons ago. But I think it's, yeah, very, very much important to recognise the very positive step he's been taking to address things to the fan base and to everyone as well. I think that's really great. So obviously we've kind of gone through the team a little bit, and there are some holes and some issues that Sanderson needs to work out. Luckily, it's just the reigning Premiership and European champions up next on Friday night at home at the AJ Bell Stadium. James, I think, you know, we can do a bit of a truncated preview, because everybody knows what Exeter are about. Picking goes from 5 metres, big pack. The Simmons brothers are really good, even if Joe Simmons doesn't know how to take a conversion, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, obviously coming into this game, you know, Sale have actually now dropped into fifth. They got leapfrogged by Northampton due to Northampton beating Exeter at Sandy Park over the weekend. I mean, what can Sale expect from the Chiefs on Friday night?
A reaction, unfortunately. you know, actually, they've had a tough 2021. I mean, they've lost three games, Wasps, Bristol, Saints. And they've had two of their three wins have been really tight games away at Newcastle and Worcester, where I think they were lucky to win both of those matches. Certainly the Worcester game, they shouldn't have won. So it's only really the Irish at home game where they've actually, you know, won reasonably comfortably and needed a red card in that game for them to get the fourth try and the bonus point. So the question really is, are they in genuinely bad form, or are they struggling with motivation and international call-ups? I mean, you know, it's quite understandable. Back-to-back seasons has made it tough. Look at Liverpool in football, right? It's just genuinely difficult to re-motivate yourself. But I think either way, they may have been triggered by the circumstances of that Saints loss with that charge down kick, or the kick that never happened. I think it's going to be a really tough game for Sale. I'm worried about it, considering the form that we're taking into this match. Joe Simmons is likely to start after being on the bench. Remember, Gareth Steenson has retired, so Harvey Skinner's their new backup fly-off, and they're trying to bring him through. You know, watch out for their front row, Hepburn, Yeandle and Williams. I mean, that is I mean, that is a high quality front row. And then their back three, O'Flaherty, Cuthbert will be back probably against us. Didn't play at the weekend. He's found a rich vein of form and is starting to score tries again. Don't forget, he's a Lion in 2013. No Hogg, but they'll bring in Facundo Cordero. You know, he's the least good brother. But I'm telling you, if we were worried about Quint hitting us on the counter attack, if he gets some turnover ball, we are really in the shit. Head to head, Dave Ewers against John O'Ross. I mean, it doesn't get more titanic than that, does it? I mean, you're going to hear it, especially with depends how much the crowd noise is turned up, because those contacts are going to be very, very loud. You know, look, my question is for you guys, which is, how does Sanderson go against Exeter? I think Exeter will go out to win this game, right? I think they're going to pick as strong a side as they can with their international call-ups. For us, do we have to go back now to what we think is probably our first choice 23? Over to you, Alex. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think we do. I think, you know, we understand what's happening, and we shouldn't have lost against Bath, but, you know, the Quinn's loss is more understandable. But, you know, I think we need a win or a performance, don't we? Because we've had two pretty dire performances in the last two games. So I think it's back to that Bristol kind of structure. The thing is with Exeter that, you know, they are so good at what they do. And, you know, I think with Bristol, if you shut down their attack, you've kind of got a way into the game. Whereas with Exeter, you know, we can try and shut down their attack, but they are just so good at it that, you know, we will really struggle. But I think they are off form. They've, you know, they've had no break. They're virtually playing, you know, an extra season compared to everyone else. You know, they're about 2 weeks between the Champions Cup final and then starting again. And that's probably the reason that they're having a lot of their issues. So I think we kind of have to take advantage of that. They didn't look great against Northampton, but it was on a bog. So it'll be a very different game at the AJ Bell. I think we have to bring in that international quality that in Faf and AJ that we probably missed the last couple of weeks. But at the same time, I think, you know, there is not a guarantee that we will win this game. And to be honest, I expect to lose it. So, you know, there are elements of it where I think you and Ashman, for example, should stay starting, because I think he deserves a starting place. Postlethwaite and Beaumont in the second row had a really good game. I think that balance in the back row was kind of the only area of improvement for the forwards against Quinns. It was the execution in the back. So bringing in that different structure of Faf and AJ is probably the way to go. And then in terms of the rest of the back line, I think Marlon Yard's playing well, but I would have someone like Roebuck coming in. I just think, you know, if you brought him in with kind of Sam James and, you know, whoever we end up playing at 12, and, you know, Luke James at fullback, a bit more of a structured back line where you're bringing him in, as you rightly say, then that's probably more advantageous because he is really talented. So I think, you know, you go back to that Bristol game, you go as that as your template, but you just make a few changes, recognising the people who've had good performances in the last couple of weeks. You know, Rafi Quirk on the bench, I think, is a why would you not, because of how well he's playing. So yeah, that would be it for me. I think Bristol is the blueprint with then some adjustments based on the last few weeks. But I do think we've got to go out to win it. So I think starting Faf and AJ is key, because I think they will make a massive difference against an extra team that, yes, they're off form, but they are still a very, very good team.
This is a Cam Neild game. You're right, James. He's getting criminally underplayed, and you have to start him. Because actually, one of the areas that you can target Exeter to an extent is the breakdown. You know, Kovacic is gone. You know, it's not necessarily an area where they've kind of built their game around. Don't get me wrong. They still have the players to jackal and enforce turnovers. But if there's going to be a weakness anywhere, you know, you can make the case that actually it's an area Sale can target. So I think, you know, Cam Neild would be a, you know, great guy to draft in at 6 or 7. I think you can look at maybe moving JL Dupria to the second row. But I think there's a really good case for starting Cobus Visa, who's in a great run of form, and Josh Beaumont, and have Lou Diaga on the bench. And then I think, you know, in the in the back line, you go conservative. You put Luke James at 15 because he's rock solid. You put Byron McGuigan and Marlon Yard at 11 and 14 because they've been there, they've done that, they're experienced. And they're used to sort of playing against Premiership quality teams. I think Roebuck might be a bit too much of a risk. Maybe bring Sam Hill back at 12. He'll be fired up to play against his old mates. And, I think, you have to start De Klerk and McGinty and maybe, you have a Roebuck or someone on the bench. You absolutely start Rafi Quirk as the backup scrum half based on his performance. Because again, it's an area where potentially we might be able to get a foothold in the game in the second half if you can bring some of that genuine pace off the bench and stretch the game a little bit as well. The last thing you want to do is get into an arm wrestle with Exeter, because it's something you're going to lose 10 times out of 10. So the more we can do to impact the game from the off in terms of structuring it to our preferred method of playing, and obviously off the bench as well, I think I think that's imperative to have any chance of getting a result. So based on that, then Alex, let's do some quick predictions. I think it's going to be a bit of a difficult one for Sale on Friday night, but what do you think the final scoreline is going to be?
I'd love to be optimistic, but I'm going to say that Sale are going to fall to a narrow but inevitable defeat against Exeter, and I think we will lose 15 points to 22. So I think we'll get a bonus point, but I think we're just not quite there to kind of do it against Exeter at home. We tend to, if we win against Exeter, it tends to be away with a few intercept tries. And I think at home, they just know how to play. And like James says, I expect a reaction. So yeah, 22 points to 15 to Exeter for me. What about you, James? What's your prediction?
Well, we have to win, but we're not going to, is my view. It's going to be 2014. I didn't hear exactly what you said, but I agree. I think we'll get a losing bonus point. I think we're going to graft really hard. But I think it's going to be a really tough game to sort of find our form. There's opportunity for us to win. Exeter aren't playing brilliantly either. But, breaking them down is going to be tough work.
Yeah, I think 27-14 to Exeter. I just think even in the format the Chiefs are in at the moment, they'll go back to basics, and their basics are a lot better than Sale's. And they'll be able to grind out a win. And I think that's all there is to it, unfortunately. I think this maybe if we'd played Chiefs after we'd beaten Bristol and we've got the sort of first team set up, I think we'd be in a good position. But I think, because we've rotated so heavily, a couple of players not played for a couple of weeks, etc., it's going to be really tough to kind of hit that fifth gear straight off the bat. And I think Chiefs should be able to pull out quite an easy win, unfortunately. Alex?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that given the three of us have predicted losses, it's inevitable we're now going to turn them over, isn't it? So, that should be a sign of confidence to any Sale fan that the three of us will all think that we're going to get beat on next weekend.
Maybe it'll be a 34-all draw. The Irish and Bristol have just finished 34-all.
Yeah, I really hope that we don't throw away a 25-point lead or whatever Bristol just threw away. That would not be helpful.
Yeah, they didn't score a point in the second half, Bristol. Not one point. If you score 34 points and a try bonus in the first half, you expect to win, don't you?
What a shame. My heart bleeds for the Bears. Anyway, one final... if you're looking for bits of good news, we've obviously just given you one there. But to round off this week's pod, we've obviously got some news to discuss, and that is that Tommy Taylor is returning home to Sale. After 5 years away at Wasps, the club announced on Wednesday that Taylor has signed a 3-year deal to rejoin the club from the beginning of the 2021-22 season. James, just quickly, what was your reaction to the news that Tommy Taylor would be rejoining the club?
Well, I think it's good news, isn't it? This is somebody that we're gutted to lose. He's homegrown. He's coming back. He's an experienced player. He's played, nearly 200 times in the Premiership. Certainly 200 senior games between us and Wasps. And he's a really good line-out thrower. He's a really good defender around the ruck. And he's a really good scrummager as well now. A part of his game has become really excellent at Wasps is his scrummaging a hooker. And we know that, that might be a little bit of a weakness at Sale with the three hookers that we currently have. Clearly questions about the depth in the position and how we can give everyone an opportunity with Ashman and Langdon and Acker. I think it would have made more sense if we'd signed him last summer, or, you know, the summer before last, before Acker arrived. That would have made a lot of sense, you know. So we've got a lot of depth there, but I think if somebody of that quality and that proven quality over many years, who's still only 29/30, wants to come home, you have to say, yeah, all right.
Alex, what did you make? What was your reaction to the news that Taylor would be returning to the club?
Yeah, very similar to James. I mean, I think you're absolutely right when someone of that quality becomes available and someone who is a homegrown player who we lost in such annoying circumstances to Wasps, who we were particularly annoyed with at the time. I think, you know, it's great to have him back, and it's a nice sort of bookend to his career, which is probably what it will be given its 3-year contract. Brings some real quality, someone really good for Ashman and Langdon to learn off as well, I think. I don't think Acker is quite the same kind of level of guidance there. You know, he's played in Premiership finals. He's done it at a really, really high level since he's left us. So really good to see him back. I agree that it's a strange position to bring someone back in, you know, that we are now quite well stocked, and hopefully this doesn't mean that we're losing one of the promising players who we have in that position. But, you know, just really, really good to have an academy lad back at the club, wearing the shirt for a long time, and hopefully bring in that kind of that identity that Sanderson wants to bring, you know, of a northern club who we've got that. It's nice to have someone who I think genuinely is international class, but also an academy graduate. And I think that's what Taylor brings that is really good. But yeah, hopefully a very, very strong first choice hooker who can then also, you know, give a lot of guidance to Ashman and Langdon as they come through.
Just quickly from myself, I think he's almost the perfect Rob Webber replacement. In that what we're missing from the team is your conventional hooker, as you mentioned, James, someone who's very strong in the scrum, who can get around the park, but, you know, poses a jackal threat, who, you know, can carry, but also get all the fundamentals of the hooker position nailed down as well, which is, you know, perhaps something we don't have at the moment. Van der Merwe is probably the incumbent starter, but we're, you know, his darts, the less said about that, the better. Brings a lot in certain areas of the game, but he doesn't necessarily have that kind of well-rounded aspect that Webber really had for a good couple of years at Sale. I think Taylor comes in as a really nice sort of all-rounder at the hooker position. It will become the de facto first choice at the position, and as we mentioned, you know, is a really good player for Langdon and Ashman to learn off. So that's the podcast for this week. Thank you to everyone who sent in the 3-word reviews. Thank you to everyone who liked Alex's very popular tweet about Rafi Quirk's fan club, which will be set up. Memberships will be going out pretty soon. And that's everything, you know. Pretty tough loss to stomach against Quins, but there's a chance to rectify things against Exeter on Friday night. So, James, anything you wanted to add before we sign off?
No, just good. I tweeted out that Coventry have got a few bit of Sale interest with a few ex-players, including Nick Dolly, and also Kieran Wilkinson's back from injury. James Harper starting at tight head. So it'll be interesting to see how they go in a season in the Championship and whether they can come back and challenge for positions at Sale next season.
And Alex, anything from you before we bid the followers adieu for the week?
I need to say, yeah, really good to see Kieran Wilkinson back, and hopefully we can get him into the squad next season. And also congratulations to Sale Sharks women, who won 47-0 up at Durham on Saturday. So at least one positive result out of the weekend for a Sharks team. Really good to see, and hopefully a bit of a springboard for the rest of the season for them.